Being Food Obsessed with author Lisa Luton. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Michael Murray about how to slow down the aging process. But before we do that, here's Ellen with the health news.
Children with autism and other developmental disorders are more likely than other youngsters to wander and put themselves in potential danger, a new study finds. Researchers analyzed data from a 2011 U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention survey of parents and guardians of more than 4,000 children with special needs who were between the ages of 6 and 17. More than 26% of the children had wandered away from a safe environment within the previous 12 months. Wandering was most likely to occur in public places, and children between the ages of 6 and 11 were more likely to wander than those 12 and older. That percentage suggests that more than 250,000 school-aged children with autism or other developmental disorders wander away from adult supervision each year, according to the researchers at Cohen Children's Medical Center of New York. The study findings were published recently in the journal PLOS-1. People who regularly exercise and get a full night's sleep may have a relatively lower risk of suffering a stroke, a large study suggests. Researchers found that among almost 300,000 U.S. adults, those who routinely slept 7 to 8 hours a night were 25% less likely to have a stroke compared to people who got either less or more sleep. The highest stroke risk was seen among long sleepers who spent at least 8 hours in bed each night. But short sleepers, those who slept less than 7 hours each night, also showed an elevated risk. However, the findings don't prove that sufficient sleep can actually prevent strokes, only that there's a link between getting the right amount of sleep and stroke risk. Lead researcher Azizi Sexus of the Center for Healthful Behavior Change at NYU Langen Medical Center in New York City said some of us look at sleep as the enemy. It gets in our way of doing things. But, Sexus said, there's growing evidence that when it comes to healthy lifestyle choices, sufficient sleep is the third pillar, along with a balanced diet and regular exercise. Sexus was scheduled to present the findings recently at the American Stroke Association's annual meeting in Los Angeles. The more obsessed that college athletes are with their sport, the more likely they are to approve of using performance-enhancing drugs, a new Canadian study finds. Two types of passion are associated with sports, the University of Waterloo researchers explained. Harmonious passion involves feelings of enjoyment, and the sport blends with the athlete's life. Obsessive passion means not being able to disconnect from a sport and having feelings of guilt when not participating. The researchers surveyed nearly 600 male and female varsity and all-star athletes at four universities in Ontario. Study author Wade Wilson, a lecturer on the Faculty of Applied Health Sciences, said they found that regardless of gender, athletes who reported higher obsessive passion indicated more lenient attitudes towards performance-enhancing drugs, while athletes who reported higher harmonious passion held more conservative attitudes towards them. The study, published recently in the Journal of Intercollegiate Sport, is the first to show how passion can affect varsity athletes' views about performing-enhancing drugs, according to the researchers. Staying socially active by joining book clubs or church groups may add years to your life after retirement, a new study suggests. The more group a person belongs to in early retirement, the lower their risk of premature death, Australian researchers found. The chance of dying within 6 years of stopping work was 2% for people who were members of two social groups before retiring and stayed in both. If they left one group, their risk of death increased to 5%, and it rose to 12% if they left both groups. Lead researcher Nicholas Steffens, a lecturer at the University of Queensland in Brisbane, said the sense of belonging that social group connections provide helps people sustain a meaningful and healthy life. Social planning may be as important as financial and medical planning to health and well-being in retirement, he said. If you don't belong to any groups, join one, he said. If you belong to only one or two groups, you might want to think about how to make the most of these and what are the groups you may want to join. The research was published online February 15th in the journal BMJ Open.
Thanks for that, Ellen. Well, our first guest is not an athlete. She's not a musician. She's not a dancer, but she is an author. Lisa Luton is the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hi. So nice to be here.
Tell us a little bit about this book and why you decided to write it.
Well, I am a healthy living strategist. I work with many clients, and I decided that so many people out there could really benefit with the work that I'm doing with these clients, and I decided to write it all down and share it with a bigger, larger audience so that I could help more people.
So what does a healthy living strategist do?
So if you start with my background was I was an entrepreneur in technology, and so I found that one of the things that I was really good at was finding solutions, creative solutions to problems. And in other words, strategies. And so years later, we can get to why I changed paths, I found that when I was working with people, coming up with creative solutions to their own unique problems was really effective. because we're all different, and you can't expect that one thing is going to work for everyone. So when we understand what somebody's struggling with, we can come up with lots of strategies how to help them.
What are, you know, people obsessed with when it comes to their bodies and when it comes to health?
Well, that's a big question. I think that most people, no matter how much they weigh, want to weigh 5 pounds less or more. I think that most people think that they don't look good enough, they're not thin enough, which goes along with they're not smart enough, they're not successful enough, and all the other enoughs. Mm-hmm. And I think that right now, many people are obsessed with what is the right diet to go on, or searching for that perfect fix that's going to take away the pain and the misery. And the truth is, there isn't one special diet that's going to work for everybody, and there isn't one magic pill either. And so I really believe we have to take the time and look at the individual and look at what's going on in their life, look what they're eating, and connect the dots, is what I like to call it, about what's going to make that particular person thrive. And in the book, I really give a step-by-step strategy on how to do that for yourself.
Lisa, in terms of each of us being individual and people, you know, coming to you with their different issues, what are the common threads that you see running through, the people that you work with and they're being able to get successful?
Well, it's really interesting because when someone comes to see me, we don't even talk about food in the beginning. Mm-hmm. We really look holistically at their whole life, and I'll ask them questions like, are you having fun in your life? What's stressing you in your life? How are your relationships? Do you like your job? Are you learning new things? Do you have a spiritual practice? How are your friendships? And we really look at their whole life, and within minutes, they're like, oh my God, I never made that connection. Like, I hate my job, so I'm coming home and I'm eating. Mm-hmm. Or my relationship stinks, and so I'm turning to ice cream. And so when we start looking first at the whole life, we can see where the voids are. And food has a way of sneaking in and filling those voids for us. So I think that's a real eye-opener as a starting point. And I really see everything. I see a lot of confusion, you know, with the nutritional world. Because one day we're told to eat this, and the next day we're told to eat something different. We also have very well-known experts saying completely different things. And so what we try to do is kind of figure out, work through all this stuff and explain it, and then say, okay, well, with what we know, now we have to figure out what's going to make you feel good. And we do lots of experiments with taking out foods and putting in other foods and just looking at it like a detective, you know, like, let's figure this out. You know, what's going to work for you? Mm-hmm.
Lisa, tell us a little bit about your background and how you left the tech world and how you moved into what you're doing today. What's the story behind that?
Sad story. I'm the what happens if story. I started very young. I was in my early 20s. I started a tech company with my boyfriend at the time, who later became my husband. And these were the days way before it was cool to start a tech company. And so we didn't have venture capital firms throwing lots of money at us. We were a bootstrap company, and we worked like crazy. We worked 80, 90 hours a week every week, and we were living on not the healthiest food you can imagine. And I wasn't taking care of myself. I had grown up with that mentality that just suck it up, you know, oh, it's just stress, get through it. And so even though I had these warning signs again and again that I wasn't really okay, I just ignored them. And I went on like that for years and years. And over that period, I had my first child. I was so depleted. I couldn't even make breast milk to feed her. But I didn't even recognize that something might be wrong. I was like, oh, okay, that's so strange. I had another child. I moved into my first house, and then out of the blue one day, I was getting ready to go to a wedding, and I started having weird things happen to me. I started getting little tingles in my finger. I started feeling numbness in my arms. I couldn't see out peripherally. And I thought, oh, my God, am I having a stroke? And I was rushed to the hospital. I was hysterical crying. I didn't know what was going on. I felt like I was in this alien body. I spent hours there. And after some tests, the resident said to me, oh, you're fine. It's probably just stress. And with those words, he really broke me because I knew what stress was. This wasn't stress. My body was screaming out like, you're broken. Like, this is not okay. And I suffered really terribly for about 2 years of these repeat symptoms. And during that time, all I wanted to know was what was wrong with me. And the doctors that I kept visiting just kept prescribing pills to me. They never tried to figure out what had gone wrong for me. And I didn't want to take pills. I wanted to get to the bottom of the matter. And so after really suffering, I decided to do what any entrepreneurial girl would do, take matters into my own hands. And I started reading and researching like crazy. And those were the days, again, there was no Google. So I had to read books, and I read and read and read, and I started interviewing my family members on our health history, what had happened to my grandparents, and I started looking at the prescriptions and saying, what was it they thought they were trying to fix? And piece by piece, I started kind of putting this little puzzle together. And I figured out that what had happened to me was I had this strange combination of exhaustion, crippling anxiety, which I never occurred to me that I ever had, because I always used to put it back in, and a predisposition to migraine, ocular migraines, which, again, I had never experienced. So this weird kind of confluence of events caused my stroke-like incidents. And once I figured it out, I was so happy, but then nobody could tell me how to fix it. And that's where the real investigation began. And so I started just paying attention to my body. And I started saying, oh, how do foods affect me? How does exercise affect me? How would meditation affect me? How does caffeine affect me? How does stress affect me? How does sleep affect me? And I became my own human guinea pig for like 20 years, basically, paying attention to everything. And not only did I restore my health, I went on to feel better and better and better. And so when I went back to school eventually for holistic nutrition, I was able to combine that strategic approach with this holistic view on nutrition. And I just started having clients show up. They just started showing up because it was a different angle, and they knew that I understood where they were, what they were dealing with, and where they were coming from.
Yeah, it's amazing when you've gone through something that how much, you know, more you're able to help somebody than somebody that just, you know, might have went to that nutritional course and then decided to write the book.
Right. We bring our own experiences and our own struggles and our own successes, you know, with us wherever we go. And I feel like I see so many women and men right now who are running around working 24/7, and that's our culture. And I worry about them. And I say, you don't want to end up like I ended up. And by taking care of yourself, giving yourself and moving that self-care up a few notches on the totem pole, you can really, really help yourself and prevent some really terrible things from happening.
We're talking with Lisa Luton. She is the author of Busy, Stressed, and Food Obsessed. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about what you can do to reduce your stress and feel better in your life.